and I couldn't come up with anything but get some help. Signed myself into a 7-day detox. I said, I'll try this, and if I get out of here, I'm going to give myself 2 weeks on the street. If I can't make it, I'm going into long term, you know, and that 2 weeks turned into a month, that month turned into 2 months. By sticking and staying, you know, I clung to people like I clung to my drug, you know, and I hear people say we were drug abusers. I've never abused a drug a day in my life, you know. I took special care of my drugs, believe me, better than I did myself, you know. I'm telling you. And it's funny how we can use words to suit ourselves, you know. Drug abuse. Okay, fine. Dina abuse is what I was doing. I was allowing my drugs to abuse me. Little did I know, okay? And it was a thing where I just took off and I left everything and everybody behind because I was tired. You know, I was just really tired. I didn't know one human being could get that tired of their self. Not what's going on around me, but of yourself. I was sick and tired of Dina, you know? And I started to open up in this detox center, and I was letting out little things. I would only tell them what I wanted them to know for fear that I would be rejected, you know. Towards the end of my stay, I think around the fourth or fifth day, I was really scared because I had to go back out to the world. In there, I was sheltered, so I was okay, you know. It was like, I have to go back out, and then what? I came out. Was like this, you know, my head is up, I'm clean, you know. But one thing that was really easy, to stay away from people, places, and things, that was easy for me. Okay. Well, I'm just going to say this and I'm closed, but I thank God for each and every one of you because I thought you lied to me when you said you'd love me until I learned to love myself. And I found out no one in Narcotics Anonymous like God has ever lied to me. Thanks for allowing me to share.
I'm an addict by the name of Al. I just wanted to share some history concerning the writing of the basic text. And a lot of the writing of the basic text, not a lot of the writing of the basic text, but a lot of the portions of the writing of the basic text took place in the Philadelphia region. Back in 1980, a bunch of us went to the first East Coast Convention. And before that point, there was being a book written for Narcotics Anonymous. And we had started having some taping workshops in someone's apartment in Bucks County, where we took the AA 12 and 12, read a step out of it, and then we sat around and we shared about what that step meant to us in our own words, and started to do some dictating with that. We went to the first East Coast Convention, and there was a meeting of the World Literature Committee there, and none of us had known that was going to happen. And my roommate at the time, his name was Pete, he found out that this World Literature Committee meeting was going on, and the convention was at Bucknell University up near Williamsport, and he drove back home to get these tapes and drove back up to Bucknell with these tapes so that we could share them, what we had done in Bucks County with the World Lit Committee. And it was about a year later. In the meantime, another person from Bucks County had gone to the World Convention in Lincoln, Nebraska, and there was the first World Literature Conference was held in Lincoln, Nebraska, and that's where the beginning of the basic text was started. About a year later, at the second East Coast Convention, what happened was that a bunch of people got together and went out to, it was the fifth World Literature Conference in Warren, Ohio. And at the time, I had no idea what a literature conference was about. I had really not much idea about what was going on there, what was going to happen, but what happened was that a few of us went in to work the next day, told them that we weren't going to be in work for a week, and went out there. And you know what was going on. We got out there. There was a whole bunch of typewriters set up, a big copying machine, And there was a bunch of addicts from all over different parts of the country, and what they were doing was they were involved in writing the basic text. And I really believe that for me, that was one of the, that was where my recovery in Narcotics Anonymous really started. I was clean up to that point. I really believe that that's where my recovery started. That's where I really began to learn about how to work the steps. That's where I really began to love this fellowship the way I do today. A lot of those members who were out there in Warren, Ohio, a lot of them had started NA in their own respective areas, or were, you know, on the ground floor or starting NA in their own respective areas. And they were betting their life every day on a fellowship that they believed in. And sometimes we say today that our oldest members are our sickest members. You know, and I really believe that sometimes, because the people that have been around the longest bet their lives on a fellowship that, you know, pretty much didn't exist. And that's, think about it, it's kind of insane. But I met these people, and I began to learn about how to work the steps. I began to learn about Narcotics Anonymous, what Narcotics Anonymous was, what Narcotics Anonymous wasn't, and began to get a love for it the way, you know, a lot of these other people had. And four of us packed into a Toyota Celica with 2 weeks worth of luggage and drove to Miami, Florida for the Sixth World Literature Conference, and which was, you know, another stage in the development of the basic text. And shortly after that, that was at the World Convention in 1981. The World Convention went on, and the following week was the World Literature Conference. And shortly after that, around Thanksgiving, there was a regional workshop in Memphis, Tennessee. And that's where the first approval form of the basic text came out. It was handed out there at the, and that's the white form that you see back in the archives, just box back there. It's, you know, it's the soft cover version. And it was at that workshop. It wasn't a World Literature Conference, but it was a lot of the same people, and a lot of the same things were going on. They were still involved in writing some portions of it, still doing some development on the tradition section. And what happened there was that they were working on a conference to get together the story section, the basic text, and do the editing to find out which stories were going to go in, which stories weren't. And we volunteered our services, and a few of us lived in a farmhouse in Ivyland, Pennsylvania. And we volunteered our services to be able to hold that World Literature Conference. That was the seventh World Literature Conference. And we held that in our house in January of 82. And a lot of people came from different parts of the country: Atlanta, Georgia, Wichita, Kansas, Ohio, New York, New Jersey, Virginia, Washington, Baltimore. And what we did was we worked on the story section of the basic text. And that was actually the last part of the basic text was worked on before the first special edition came out. So, you know, in reality, the basic text was kind of finished in our region. The work and development was finished, you know, in the farmhouse. And it was a three-bedroom house, and there was about 30, 40 addicts camping out in this farmhouse. And I remember about halfway through the weekend, it started getting real cold in the house, and we couldn't understand why. And frost started developing on the windows, and we ran out of oil in the middle of this whole thing, and had to call the oil company to come out. And but we still kept on going. We still kept typing, still kept copying all the way up, you know, all the way around the clock. And you know, working on literature has been, you know, I'm still involved in literature today, and working on literature has been something not only that's been special to my recovery, but it's been, you know, working on the basic text and things like that has been one of the most special things that you know, I feel I've participated in my entire life. You know, I really feel a sense of gratitude. You know, and still when I read my basic text today, you know, I can remember working on certain sections and arguments and controversies that we had. And a lot of, the way it was approved was that about 25 addicts, if any of you have ever been to an area service meeting or anything, you can probably appreciate this, but about 25, 30, 40 addicts would sit around the table and discuss each sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, and until we all came into some type of agreement as to what needed to be in there. And sometimes it got real heated, sometimes it got real hot. There was different factions. You know, we talk about the factions within Narcotics Anonymous today, and there was different factions, different people wanted different things, and but we came to some agreement, you know, and you know, basic text was written. And we also hosted the Ninth World Literature Conference in Jamison, PA, which was after the basic text was approved and was already out to the fellowship. There had begun work on what we're calling It Works How and Why today, Steps and Traditions. And there was a lot of work done on it in San Francisco at the Eighth World Literature Conference. And the Ninth World Literature Conference was held in Jamison, and was, you know, the development was, you know, taken further on the Steps and Traditions portion. There was some original drafts, you know, done there. That was, I believe, not November of 83. November of 84, that was. And there was, you know, so there was a lot of things done within the region as far as literature is concerned. And Hotline Henry is still kicking it out as our regional literature chairperson, and he wants you to get involved in all kinds of literature work that's coming up. So you can get with him after the meeting about that.
My name is John, and I'm an addict. Of course, the wonderful thing about all that is that Henry still can't read and write. well, you know, we're as bad as our worst secret. My name is John, and I'm an addict. And I don't know, there are a million things going through my mind. What Al didn't tell you is that the night in Ivyland, the weekend in Ivyland, well, what was particularly poignant about running out of the heat, running out of the oil, is that it was something like 3 degrees below. And that was the winter. It broke all the records. And I remember that because I was, you know, there I was swept up in our history, and I was driving this preposterous Italian car that had, you know, that you need to put a blanket on the engine and go out every hour to start it to make sure it's still started. So that was how I participated that weekend. I know there's just there are so many different ways to approach history, and I was thinking the best way. I was just going to listen tonight, but Daniel came up and put a twist in my arm, and I guess the best way to do is just sort of talk about my own memories, about my own recovery, and if that jogs, you know, puts other things into perspective, things that I participated in, that would probably work out pretty well. I've always said, and I've said this many times, that what makes us different, I mean, lots of things that make us different to other fellowships, no argument there, but one of the things that makes us different from the guy down the street, let's say, is that we don't seem to have beloved co-founders, that we don't have one or two or three personalities to pin this all on, and then have our history revolve around them and their visions. There are hundreds and there are thousands of founders in Narcotics Anonymous. And if I can like Henry make a plug for us is that while that has made our growth very slow and sometimes very weird, that I believe firmly that that has a lot to do with the spiritual principle of anonymity. You know, we're all founders. We all keep this going on a day-to-day basis, and we all do our bit. And because we're all founders, that we all equally participate in the vision that keeps Narcotics Anonymous going and that will make it better tomorrow. So a lot of our, you know, we all have an opportunity to be a legend. In this kind of thing, though, you know, you can mention some of the names. I came to NA at the beginning of 1975, so I wasn't like Jim in on the ground floor. So when I came, there were meetings going in Narcotics Anonymous for 5 years. I was 12-stepped by a guy named Ray T, who was one half of the brother pair that Jimmy mentioned. Ray and his brother Brian. Brian, who, by the way, was the speaker at the first Philadelphia Service Convention. That's what Bobby B. decided to call it. And Brian T. was the banquet speaker. And I remember sitting on the other end of that head table, sitting next to somebody's wife who didn't want to be there, you know, to spend the whole thing looking out and not having anybody to talk to and feeling sort of weird. But Ray took me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And that was a big step for me. I had been playing with getting my act together for a while, and I had gone elsewhere and did precisely what I was asked to do. I didn't think, I didn't drink, and I went to meetings, and of course I continued using. I met Ray, who suggested, Ray's a pretty blunt, direct kind of guy, he told me he thought I was a crock of shit and an asshole, but he might be able to help. And so he took me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I was pretty dazed, and I can only remember two things: that I wore a suit, and Dutch was there, and he maintained that I didn't wear socks, and I don't believe that to be true. But I know by that point that when the first two groups started in the early 70s, immediately they formed what they called the intergroup, so they could have a monthly place to argue outside meetings. And there was no real concept of having a GSR, that everybody went. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it's funny the way your memory works, that I would have sworn that when I came that there were five meetings, and I saw the late 1974 meeting list back there, and it says that there were eight, and the two that I was going to most regularly, the one at the Open Door in Westchester and the Wednesday Night Zoo in Wilmington, were not on that meeting list. So I'm really beginning to see the value that for a lot of the details of, you know, just getting the paper. If I can give this editorial, your personal opinion, that Danny seems to be the right man at the right time, and I am very, very, very appreciative of his efforts and the people he has gathered around him to help do that. I'm really moved by seeing that back there. I went to AA and to NA meetings for the next for the first 3 years of my recovery, and there was no Narcotics Anonymous literature. There were very, very few meetings. We were all alcoholics and drug addicts, and we were all sober. And I bought into the party line, which then went that we were being kept clean and sober by AA, and that NA was sort of the AA junior division where the kids got to talk about dope. And I went to, in 1978, I was offered and received a job in London and took it, and this is a city where I've been many times before and have been many times since, and I took it on the basis that there are lots of good AA there. And I went there and had a really startling revelation as it became more and more difficult for me to remain clean and recovering, to get a sense of momentum and growth just going to AA. And I had to come to the really reluctant conclusion, I'll be honest, you know, I fought this, that it was Narcotics Anonymous that was keeping me clean, and that AA was the sideline that was the drain on my energies. And I don't usually talk like this at meetings, but this is a history meeting, and this is my history. And, you know, when I went to NA, and I went regularly, and I went to as many Narcotics Anonymous meetings a week as I could, that I was just present those first couple of years. I was a GSR for a little bit, but you know that I don't want to say that I didn't have a commitment for this program. I didn't have a vision for it. You know? And when I came back from London, I went to my last AA meeting, haven't been since. And I started going to Narcotics Anonymous regularly. And that meant traveling a lot. That meant going to going up to Bucks County, going into finding out where Tarsdale Avenue. You know that I knew how to get from Center City to Chestnut Hill, and beyond that, Philadelphia was a mystery. And getting involved. I remember driving to the first East Coast convention with Maggie O and a guy named Ray P, and we really didn't know what was going to happen. And I think that was my emotional breakthrough. That was my emotional watershed. I remember being at the same meeting that Al was, where a guy named Bo S. Spoke about his vision for the basic text. And I think that that's when I flashed on to what I said at the beginning, is that this is really an opportunity for me, for all of us, to participate and grow and really make a difference and have an impact on something, a lot different than having it handed to you on a silver platter and saying, that's the way it is, Sonny. I spilled more beer in my tie than you drank in a lifetime. Glad to see you young people coming around. So, I was just overwhelmed. I didn't realize, of course, that long-term recovery means you get as old as those people and you get gray hair and all sorts of things. I couldn't envision what being as clean as I am would be like, because I couldn't envision myself being this old, and it's very interesting. this is what one day at a time means. In 1976, when the letter came that Jimmy spoke about, that included a copy of the NA3, which was the first effort from California, which was then the center of it all, which was the first effort to get some structure, get some handle on this. What we didn't understand is that they were just as confused and as flaky as we were. So we have surpassed them and seem to be less confused and flaky than they are. So these are the two oldest regions in the whole wide world, but we seem to be doing very well, I think. So they put together an area service committee. They elected GSRs, and by that point there were meetings in Harrisburg. And the people in Harrisburg had formed an area service committee, which eventually for them included Williamsport, and we used to have we formed the Mid-Atlantic region. What became the Mid-Atlantic region? We call it the East Coast region, the Pennsylvania region, the Mid-Pennsylvania region, all sorts of different things. But eventually became the Mid-Atlantic region, and we met twice a year. And all the GSRs for all the meetings showed up and voted, and we had a picnic or a spaghetti dinner, depending on whatever season it was. It wasn't until 1981 when, by this point, there were other areas. There was a Baltimore, Washington area, and I remember some of us went down to talk to them. Steve Kay and I did, and others went down and spoke to the people in Washington, and we invited them to join the Mid-Atlantic region. Ray T's brother Brian had moved to Connecticut, and meetings were starting going in Connecticut. They were starting going in Virginia. It began to travel. I remember when, by this point, I was heavily involved in area service. At its height in 1982, the Philadelphia area went as far north as Allentown, as far west as Lancaster, as far south as Newark, Delaware, and included most of the meetings in New Jersey. During a period from 1981 and 1982, that every area service meeting, there were four or five meetings, brand new meetings. And reality set it off. Reality was a storefront, not a clubhouse. It was a bunch of people who rented a storefront, and according to the lease, they just couldn't hang around. They could go in, they could have meetings, and they'd go out. There were young people's AA meeting, and they were a young people's AA group, and they had 10 meetings a week, and they sat down and they talked about, and they voted that they were going to become a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. The number of meetings in the Philadelphia city limits almost tripled, thanks to reality, and that was just sort of the catalyst. It just went and got bigger and bigger and bigger, and you know, you talk about area circus now. This was not, if it was spiritual, it was deeply hidden. I mean, we've never worn our spirituality on our sleeves. It got so large, it got so unwieldy, it just made a lot of sense in 1982 to form a greater Philadelphia region. And we pulled out of the Mid-Atlantic with some resentments on their part. By that point, the Mid-Atlantic was having its own problems. They had areas that went as far as Connecticut and went as far south as Virginia Beach. They were perhaps a trifle too large, but it's funny, you look back at it now, it's just, there's this real urge to keep it together, you know, not to separate. So you'd start at a nucleus and it'd just get bigger and bigger and people would attach to it. And I don't think what we realize, and I think this is interesting, sort of our modesty, true modesty, I don't think any of us really realize that a lot of people viewed Philadelphia as the center. We play a unique and a special role in the worldwide development of Narcotics Anonymous. We